You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am your host, the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, Marcus. I'm just here so I won't get fined, Vandenberg. What is going on, Brother Marcus?
What's up, Nate? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. It's been a interesting week at work and in my podcast dealings. But yes, we've got a lot to talk about this week on the show. We've got some NFL news. We've got a review of SummerSlam and also a review of Straight Outta Compton with Brian Mann from Yahoo Movies. And we've got some crazy stuff to talk about in segment four. But before we get into any of that, Marcus, I think the people want to know, how have you been? Last time we spoke, you were getting ready for another pilgrimage to the Mecca of Disneyland. How'd that go?
Went well. Went down there on Friday. Both got annual passes, my wife and myself. So we'll be doing a lot, I guess, over the next year. And then Saturday, we saw Straight Outta Compton, and then we went to the Jays Angels game, which was fun. And then Sunday, we went to California Adventure briefly before coming home and then watching SummerSlam.
Okay. And then how was Disneyland? How is Disneyland since the last time you went 2 weeks ago?
How dare you? Last time was a year ago, all right? 1 year. Actually, 1 year to the day was the last time I went to Disneyland, funny enough. It has not changed much in the past year, but did you hear about all the changes that are coming in the near future?
No, I didn't. Do they involve Captain EO?
No, it does involve Star Wars, though.
So. What's going on with Star Wars at Disneyland? Are they devoting a whole new branch of the park to the Lucas franchise?
Bingo. They are. In both Disney World and Disneyland. So, both areas will get a Star Wars land, essentially. And they didn't say a date of when this will be open. So, I would say maybe by the time the second movie comes out, which would be in, 2 years or so?
Yeah.
So, not anytime soon, but that was sort of exciting.
Okay, so you mentioned tie-ins with movie franchises. Is Toontown still open from Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
It is.
Okay. So I haven't been to Disneyland since probably the mid-90s, maybe the late 90s, and Toontown was always a fun little stop along the way.
Yeah, Toontown is open. Captain EO was not. It's still open in Disney World, but Disneyland is not open anymore.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just hoping that when they open up this Star Wars portion of the park that they allow Lando Calrissian, a.k.a. Billy Dee Williams, to show up and be like the Grand Marshal for the day.
You would think they could get all the heavy hitters for this, right? Whoever's still alive?
I would assume. But I just want Billy Dee because as of yet, he has still not been announced for the new movies. And everybody else has been put in the new movies.
Oh, really?
Harrison Ford. Yeah, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, the damn Chewbacca. But no love for Billy Dee yet.
Well, Lucy S. is Colt 45 to lean on.
This is a case of space racism or spacism, if you will. It's like, how can you not put Billy Dee in to this new franchise if everybody else is coming back? What are they going to say? He had high cholesterol and couldn't make it?
That is kind of odd.
Yeah, this is the second most disrespected Billy Dee has been when it comes to movies. Did you you heard the Batman story?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay, well, we talked about it briefly on Review and Impact a while back, but in the original Batman, the Batman 1989 with Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton,
mm-hmm.
You know Billy Dee Williams was in that movie, right?
As what role?
Billy Dee Williams was playing District Attorney Harvey Dent.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know anything about District Attorney Harvey Dent?
No.
Harvey Dent, spoiler alert, becomes the villain Two-Face.
Ah, okay.
And so Billy Dee signed off for that, thinking that he would be allowed to play Two-Face in the sequel. But they switched directors, and Billy Dee was still attached to the project, and they were like, well, you know, Billy, we can either pay you a little bit of change or we can put you in this movie, and we've got Tommy Lee Jones on the phone, so we're going to pay you this couple grand or however much the amount was in his contract, and Billy Dee did not get to play Two-Face, much like Terrence Howard in the first Iron Man was not allowed to come back and put on the suit.
Wow. Shady.
That's always my favorite moment in Iron Man 1 when Terrence Howard just looked at the suit. Next time, buddy. Like, no, there won't be a next time. but yeah, that's the whole backstory with Billy Dee Williams and Batman. It's like, man, Tommy Lee Jones did his thing in I think it was Batman Returns, or maybe it was Batman and Robin. I don't remember which one it was. But Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face would have been pretty great.
Man, poor Billy Dee.
Like, one side would have been all smooth and the other side would have just been crazy.
Would have been a good combination.
Yeah, I think it would have worked well. But you know what isn't a good combination, Marcus?
What's that?
Apparently, preseason football and the bodies of some NFL players. There's been a couple of high-profile injuries. Last week, we talked about RG3 getting banged up. And more bad news for the Redskins in what some folks might see as a bit of karmic justice. The newly signed Junior Gallette has a torn Achilles. What do you think this latest bit of news has to portend for the Redskins' future?
I mean, the Redskins had no business signing this dude. They really should have not gone after him. I don't care how talented he is. He's got some pretty disturbing video out there if you haven't seen on YouTube of him. I think it was maybe a couple years ago now. Him at a party. I think it was on a beach.
Yeah, and whipping a woman.
Yeah, he's attacking a woman. And this video surfaced earlier this year, and the Saints found out. And at that point, the Saints were pretty much done with him. So once the Saints officially cut him, the Redskins swooped him up. And before he even got to play in week one, he's now out for the season.
Yeah, and he is a talented player, but this is, like, I'm not sad at all. Like, you never want to wish injury on somebody, but, you know, what's the old saying? Couldn't happen to a nicer guy?
Yeah.
Like, if you believe in karma, then this is something that you're like, hey, I mean, if it kind of fits, the universe has spoken. But I didn't think the Redskins were going anywhere before this. And now you've got a key player on offense banged up and someone who they projected to be a key player on defense banged up. So do you think that they finish anywhere other than last in the division, Marcus?
No, dead last. They are not a good team. And I think the Jay Gruden era will come to an abrupt end after this season, because I don't see that team, even if I held the RG3 all season, really doing more than maybe six wins at the most.
Yeah, and I think the six wins is pushing it. Like, you know, depending on how much RG3 plays, depending on if that line can keep him upright, you know, your next option is Colt McCoy. And I like Colt McCoy. I've always thought he was a good player. But if Colt McCoy is your starter, then you've got issues.
Yeah.
Another team that has issues staying in the NFC East is the Dallas Cowboys. And Orlando Scandrick, Marcus, looks like he's going to be on the shelf for a little bit.
Yeah, he's out for the year as well. Torn ACL and MCL. He's probably their best DB by far on that team. And, yeah, it's, you know, the injuries are a part of football, and the whole backlash this week on mostly social media about preseason's too long, blah, 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 blah. This happens every preseason.
Was it Aaron Rodgers, one of the people chirping about that?
Aaron Rodgers, and my favorite was Adrian Peterson, who wanted to reduce the preseason games to three. Mind you, Adrian Peterson hasn't carried a football in a preseason game since 2011, so really, maybe you're not the guy to be the vocal person on this topic, because you don't play in preseason. It doesn't apply to you. So they're not going to change the length of preseason. It makes these teams money. It's basically two extra home games for these teams. So I don't see the owners voting to reduce preseason unless they want to increase the regular season from 16 to 18 games. And that's another debate that will be had if that's proposed. But either way, they're playing 20 games. Whether there's 18 games that count or 16, it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think eventually we'll get to the 18 games, because if I'm an owner and I know football by nature is a violent game, would I rather, if a guy's going to get hurt, it sucks either way, but would I rather have him get hurt in a game that doesn't mean anything or a game that actually means something? I want more games that actually mean something.
Yeah.
So I think that's where they're headed. Let's do the same thing for the Cowboys that we did with the Redskins, Marcus. Where do you see them finishing up in the NFC East this year?
Towards the top of the division again.
You believe the combination of Julius Randle and was it Darren McFadden can make up for,
or Joseph Randle?
Who did I say?
You said Julius.
Oh yeah,
Lakers. Yeah. Power forward.
That'd be a hell of a signing.
Quite the transition, yeah.
And wasn't Randle our guy that was in the store stealing draws with the clowning baby?
Gucci Black,
guilty black cologne. But yeah, do you think those guys will be able to pick up the load left from who's your man in Philly now?
Oh, Chip Kelly or Sam Bradford?
Yeah, running back.
The running back?
DeMarco
Murray.
You think they'll be able to fill in the numbers that DeMarco Murray had last year?
I think so, but a lot of that, I think, and with DeMarco's case, was the offensive line in Dallas, which is stellar. So I think that those two can really benefit from having that great O-line. So I think they can step in and fill in. And you look at the NFC East, the only, I think, legit threat to the Cowboys winning that division would maybe be the Giants, if they can get their act together.
I mean, they do have a million-dollar quarterback who says he's one of the best.
Who, RG3?
Your man, Eli.
Yeah.
Eli Manning. I made the point on Atomic Podcast when I was on there last year that Eli Manning is all – he's like the quarterback equivalent of – the human condition. Like, all of us wish we were Peyton Manning. All of us dream to be like Tom Brady. But in reality, we're probably more like Eli. Like, we'll have some great days. We'll have some good days. But most days are somewhere in the middle.
That's better than being Cooper Manning, correct?
Oh, poor Cooper. He could have been the best.
That's what I've heard.
I think Dallas has a legit shot. I'm not one of these guys that pile on Tony Romo. I think he's a quality quarterback. I'm interested to see what Philly can do, and that quarterback situation intrigues me. If Sam Bradford can stay healthy, maybe they can do some things with that offense. Washington, like you mentioned, is going nowhere fast. So if Dallas can avoid any other major injuries and that line can open up some holes for the running game, I think Dallas can do some things.
Yeah, I mean, what was once a pretty respectable division, it's pretty weak now. I mean, Eagles have their own question marks with Bradford. The Redskins are not going to be good. And the Giants have question marks. And that sort of leaves the Cowboys to really, take control. But they are the Cowboys, so you never know with them.
Marcus, you're a journalist. So what do you think is the over-under on the number of weeks until some smart aleck journalist prints the headline, NFC least?
Week three.
It's that soon.
Yeah.
when everybody except the Cowboys has at least two losses.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of 0-2s, 0-3s floating around, maybe.
All right. Speaking of zeros, Marcus, somebody that whose bank account will be missing a number followed by a lot of zeros is your man Marshawn Lynch, fined $75,000 by the NFL. Obviously, he can afford that tab, but what do you make of it? Do you think the suspension, fine was justified? And do you think this has any effect on beast mode going forward?
Justified, I guess. I mean, if those are the rules and you don't follow them, then I guess it's justified. But do I think it's a silly rule? Yeah, I do. As someone who...
I was going to say, so you, as a member of the quote-unquote media, don't mind if players don't want to talk.
I mean, if they're going to talk and not give the media anything to use, then I'd rather you just shut up and not talk at all. Because clearly, A, he's not comfortable in that setting, and B, when he does talk, he really doesn't provide anything that's you can use. So he's not someone you should really be building your story around in the first place as a reporter. So, I think journalists have to find other ways to tell that story without necessarily getting valuable answers from Marshawn.
Now, do you think that this is going to affect him in the sense of will he be more open with the media this coming season? Because I think as much as you want to put it on Marshawn, I think the media got complicit halfway through the season where it almost became a cat and mouse game of can we get this guy to say anything? Can we get him to be anything other than a machine that keeps repeating the same answer?
I think we're going to see similar to what we saw last season. I think he will talk to the point where he doesn't get fined on a weekly basis, but I don't think those answers, I think similar to what we got at the press conference, I don't think those answers would be anything that we can actually use in a story or report on. So I think he'll just find a way to dodge the rules, and then knowing the NFL, they'll probably change the rules on the fly and say you have to give concrete answers or blah, 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 and they'll try to go after him.
Okay. Real quick before we move on to our last topic here in segment one, have you seen the Key and Peele clip where they did a parody of Richard Sherman and Marshawn Lynch?
No.
Oh, man, it's excellent. And I advise anybody listening to this program to go and check that out. It was when they did the Key and Peele Super Bowl special. Oh, okay. And basically the gist is Richard Sherman is doing all this talking, and Marshawn Lynch, they go over to Marshawn, and he just says something like, "I'm just here so I don't get in trouble." Then Richard Sherman goes on for another 5 minutes. "You got something to say, Marshawn?" "I like biscuits and gravy." And then Richard Sherman goes on to talk about something. "You want to say something, Marshawn?" "I don't know why people have a problem with rainbows." And then he goes on, and then finally he's like, "Is there anything else, Marshawn, that you want to say to the people?" And then he just looks at the camera and he's like, "How y'all not going to nominate the Lego movie for more than one Oscar?" And then he's like, "You know what? That's a good point, Marshawn. The Lego movie was criminally underappreciated."
It was. I'm still surprised. I mean, considering what 10 movies are up for nomination or can be.
Yeah.
They couldn't give one to the Lego movie.
Well.
Yeah. Well, I think probably said the same thing about Shadada Compton that year when it comes to nominations.
Yeah, you're right about that. And then maybe that's something we'll ask Brian Mann when we talk to him in segment two. But I did mention there was one last topic I wanted to bring up to you, Brother Vandenberg. And I know this might be difficult for you to talk about, but your beloved Trojans have been in the news lately, and not for the right reasons. What's going on with your man, Steve Sarkisian, a.k.a. Coach Sark, a.k.a. Coach Cuddy Sark?
This story is so overblown. I mean, yes, your coach shouldn't be drunk in front of your alumni and donors, but...
No, that's putting it mildly.
How many of the alumni and donors at that event were drunk, number one? All right, let's be fair. Number two, the whole thing that came out afterwards about locker room or being alcohol being in the locker room, people aren't really understanding what that was meant or what was said behind it, what it actually meant. Sarge said the liquor in the locker room was actually for the coaches. It was in the coaches' office. It wasn't like the players were drinking after games. And then number three, I mean, you compare this story to what happened across town in UCLA with Sal Alossi and with Diddy and the whole bullying aspect. I feel like people are more critical of Sarkisian for being drunk on a Saturday as opposed to a strength coach who's basically bullying players. I think this story will go away once the season starts. It would help if they actually won some games. That would make people forget about it, especially the USC alumni, who they're pretty split on Sark. They were sort of split from the beginning because I think a lot of people felt like they could get a high profile coach and not someone who was a former assistant who came back to the school. So it's been, I don't know, I just feel like this story is just, it's not a big deal. And especially the comments about whatever he said about the opponents. I mean, really, we're going to be that sensitive about what he's saying about UCLA or Notre Dame? Like, come on.
Well, to your point about the Sal Alossi thing with at UCLA, I am not surprised that people are making a bigger deal about the Steve Sarkisian thing than what happened with Diddy's son at UCLA, because A, it's Diddy's son, and I think that there is little sympathy for him, rightly or wrongly, because of who his daddy is. And B, and we talked about this during the All Players United conversation with Morgan Campbell last year, Marcus, people don't care about these players. The vast majority of the collegiate football fandom do not look at these student athletes as people that should have rights, people that should have respect. They're basically like, hey, shut up and play. You're getting rewarded with a scholarship and room and board, so shut up and play. So I don't think that there would be any sympathy, regardless of who the kid is, if they're being bullied by a coach, because the burden of public opinion, for the large part, is on the side of the coaches.
And that's, you know, unfortunate that the players don't have more respect from the fans. I mean, the fact that, you know, essentially these guys are professional athletes without the money. I mean, from the merchandise sales to, you know, the fans that come out to see them. I mean, the fact that Ohio State could basically sell out the Horseshoe for a spring practice game to see these college kids play, and they're not benefiting from any of this. So at the very least, you know, when it comes to stuff like coaches and bullying allegations along those lines, you would think that they would get more support, but nope.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like, come on, man. Like, coaches are important, but in the grand scheme of things, you got to have the players. Like, I love Bobby Bowden. He might be my favorite college coach of all time, but I never saw him running down the field like Deion Sanders or Charlie Ward or any of them dudes out there. It's like Nick Saban. Maybe you could make the argument, Marcus, he's the greatest college football coach ever in the history of the sport. But Nick Saban isn't out there running routes. Nick Saban isn't out there making tackles. And it's like, man, these kids are generating so much money for these programs, and the level of – and it's not just respect. It's the level of appreciation that I think is not there for these players, for these guys that for the most part are still figuring out who they are as human beings. You know, 16, 17, or not 16, but like 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids and young men that are figuring out who they are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, take it easy on the kids. And I saw your man Sark come out and make some comments, and I guess Pat Hayden has said that the university is going to be supportive. Do you see anything else coming from this incident, Marcus?
Well, he's going to rehab despite the fact that he says he doesn't have a drinking problem, which feels like he's sort of being forced into going to rehab.
They tried to make him go to rehab. Oh, rest in peace, Amy.
I think Sark needs to definitely win the Pac-12 this year if he wants to be sure that he's going to have a job the following season.
Do you think they can? Do you think they will?
I think they get to the title game. It'd probably be them and Oregon in the title game, and it'd be a crapshoot. But they do play Oregon November 21st, and then they would play them essentially like 2 weeks later So that could be interesting. But I think they have a good shot. They have a pretty good team this year.
So you think anything less than being in the Pac-12 title game is going to be trouble for Coach Sark?
Yeah, I mean, they're ranked number 8, I believe, in the preseason poll. So they're going to have to live up to those expectations.
Yeah. So hopefully he can get this under control if there is an issue or a problem there and get some wins on the field.
So he can drink it up off the field. But he said he's done drinking this season.
Is that going to be the new school song, Drink On?
Oh, I see what you did there.
Oh, poor Trojans. Poor Trojans. I never thought I'd utter that sentence.
They'll be all right.
So, you know who else is going to be all right, Marcus?
Who's that?
The listeners of this very program. Because coming up next, if you're into hip-hop, we got you covered. If you're into wrestling, we got that too. Coming up next is friend of the program and Marcus's Yahoo compatriot, Brian Mann. We're going to talk about SummerSlam. We're going to talk about Straight Outta Compton. And Marcus, you know we're going to talk about that man called Sting.
And that sad-looking face paint.
Yeah, that man, we got to talk to Brian about that. Like, why did they have that man sitting out there in that hot, hot box for like 20 minutes, however long that promo went?
It was very impressive. He didn't move or sneeze or...
I wonder if they had a chair. Like, was he standing the whole time?
There was no chair when they unlifted the thing. So, yeah, he must have been standing the whole time.
Maybe he was sitting and then he... No, well, he had to be standing because you would have seen the thing move if he was sitting and stood up.
That's what they should put out. A DVD of all the times the WWE has pulled off these basically magic tricks on the audience. And I saw an explanation online of how they did it. They did it during the Bray Wyatt promo when the lights were off and they brought him out there, but they're pretty good at this thing.
Yeah, maybe who knows, Marcus, maybe the Black Scorpion rubbed off on Sting and he learned some new tricks. So we got that coming up in segment 2, and of course you're going to want to stick around for the ratchetness in segment 4. So stick and stay, because we got more Kings of Sport right after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past through Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Griscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman Podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Got an opinion you want to share with the Kings? Well, have your say in one of three different ways. Visit Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport. Email us at TheKingsOfSport@gmail.com and hit us up at CosPod on Twitter.
In correctional facilities, cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist.
And now it's time to return to the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time.
It's the Kings of Sports, thekingsofsport.com.
This gangsta shit, and this the motherfucking thanks I get. Hello, I started this gangsta shit.
We're back on the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation. Place to Be Nation is your one-stop spot for the latest and greatest news, articles, opinions, and podcasts when it comes to the world of sports and pop culture. If you want it, they got it. Anything interesting, they have an interesting take on it. You're down with the Kings. Place to Be Nation is down with the Kings. So get down with PlaceToBeNation.com. And as Marcus mentioned in the A block, it was a pretty great weekend if you are a fan of movies or even a fan of professional wrestling. And in honor of this great weekend that both Marcus and I had a chance to enjoy SummerSlam and the movie Straight Outta Compton, I think it's time we talk to somebody that has a bigger view on both of these issues. And I don't know, Marcus, you know anybody we can call? Anybody we can bring in? Actually, I don't even know why I'm teasing this. Like, it's some meta thing.
It's Brian Mann, people. It's Brian Mann.
We already announced the dude like 5 minutes ago.
Man, I was getting excited. I thought David Arquette was going to come on the show.
former champion. Here's the thing, Marcus. I tried to get Paul Giamatti, but he wouldn't return my phone call. So you're the next best thing.
Oh, good. He's never done a wrestling movie, though. He's done a boxing movie, but not a wrestling movie.
Oh, well, Brian, we're going to talk a little wrestling in a second, but Straight Outta Compton, making all sorts of money. Marcus and I both had a chance to see the film. You reviewed the film and had a chance to sit down and speak to the principal people involved with bringing this thing to life. What were your initial thoughts on the movie?
I first saw the movie, I think, probably about a month ago now. We knew that we were going to have the director and the cast in, so I was able to see got to actually go to the first New York screening, and it was a very different atmosphere than what screenings typically are. Typically, when it's that far in advance, you go to a screening room that the studio owns, you're in there with critics, it's maybe 50 people tops. This was a packed house, probably about 300 people, Lincoln Center, and probably I'd say about 60% was critics, and then 40% was just general population. And I could tell by the reaction of that crowd, this thing was a huge hit, and it was really hitting all the right notes for them. I got to say, I was really pleasantly surprised for the movie, because going into it, I was expecting more of the Ray treatment, more of the Walk the Line treatment, where with these films, they can't help but kind of immortalize their principal subjects to the point that, you know, someone walks in and everyone's like, oh my goodness, that's Ray Charles. And they can't quite ever get to the point where they treat Ray Charles as a real person, for example. But this film, even further, I was, you know, kind of worried, because you had the principal, you know, the surviving principal people still alive and heavily involved in the production of this movie. So I was concerned, but then when I saw it, it reminded me more of a Hustle and Flow. It's a whole lot more active and vibrant, and it has a great deal of excitement in those early scenes, and they're actually creating the music and those hip-hop scenes. I myself, as with most people who see the movie, I had some issues with the second half. That's where it does kind of go into Ray territory, where it struggles to sort of find a third act and a resolution. I kind of would have preferred if they had maybe had the entire movie be just their tour. But with that said, I thought, you know, where they went was pretty good. I know people are now, you know, writing their think pieces about what was or wasn't in the movie. But overall, I got to say, I thought it was a great time, and I'm excited to see it again.
Nate, what'd you think about it?
I really liked it. You know, obviously, NWA is a group that came along at the right time in my childhood and my youth, because that was right around when we moved to San Diego. And so a lot of the things that were being talked about through their music resonated with me, you know, because I was getting to see it, if not firsthand, I was adjacent to it, you know what I mean? And so I had my doubts, much like Brian, when coming into this project. And then, you know, you and I saw this a couple weeks after its release, and the reviews have already been out there, and they've been, for the most part, pretty positive. And so I went in, I'm like, okay, I went in with an open mind. I dug it, man. The actors, I think, not only looked like who they were playing, but they felt genuine. They felt real. I was happy to see my man from Friday Night Lights playing MC Ren.
Yeah.
Was it Voodoo Tate from Friday Night Lights, Aldis Hodge? I was probably happy to see him because I liked him in Leverage. But it, I do think there was a little bit of the second act of the movie, maybe the third act, not really hitting as hard as the beginning, when you were first seeing these guys start to in their formative years. But overall, I thought it was pretty good. I know there are issues with what was left out in terms of some of Dr. Dre's history with women, but that did not ruin the movie for me. I really enjoyed it. I thought, as far as these biopics go, this one felt more connected to the now. It felt more connected to things that still resonate in 2015 than, say, a Ray or Walk the Line or something like that. What'd you think, Marcus?
Like you guys, I liked it overall. I thought it was maybe 20 minutes too long, and that last 20 minutes just felt like they were setting up for a sequel, especially the ending, especially how the movie ends with Dre and Suge. I think once we got in the territory where we saw Snoop and Tupac, that's when I felt like, okay, maybe this is just going on too much, because it felt like it was going in a whole different direction than the original purpose of the movie, which was about NWA. It just felt like it spun off into a whole movie about rap culture, right, in the 90s.
But damn, if that dude didn't look like Tupac, though. Man, I will give them that.
And he looked nothing like Snoop, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, the dude who looks like Tupac, actually, we interviewed him, and he claims that apparently he's working with John Singleton to make a Tupac movie. But, you know, I don't know. John Singleton's one of those guys who says he's making movies that he frequently is not, including Straight Outta Compton at one point. No, I mean, I really like the film. I completely agree, though. I mean, when you got, like, Dre, you know, that scene where he's like, hey, Tupac, wait till you hear some of this. Yeah. And he puts on California Love, and it's like, it's a real, like, Marvin Berry from Back to the Future scene. And that was actually a scene that was added after Suge Knight went to jail. Because then he goes in the other room, and, like, you know, Suge Knight's, like, putting that dog, sticking that dog on somebody. That was all added after Suge Knight went to jail, because they knew that, oh, well, this guy can't sue us at this point. So, and obviously people are upset that, yeah, like you said, with Dr. Dre, specifically the Dee Barnes stuff not being in there. I don't know. Where I kind of come down on that is, I mean, you look at a film like Get On Up, the James Brown movie, and it had a similar problem with the way that it handled his issues with women. Specifically, though, the Dee Barnes incident, the way I came down on that is it doesn't necessarily service the story that they're trying to tell. It doesn't really advance anything. Much in the same way that the Tupac stuff as well, but I certainly understand why they left it out.
Yeah, I mean, considering the people who are involved in the movie, there's no surprise as to why they left it out. You know, it wasn't a true independent quote-unquote biopic. So, I mean, it would have been... awkward's not the word if that was portrayed in the movie, but it just would have... It would have felt a little out of place, I think, if we just all of a sudden cut to a scene where Dre was, you know, beating up Michelet. It just would have felt weird.
Yeah, I think... I don't know. I think there might have been a way to handle it. I was a little disappointed with the way they just handled certain criminal aspects of Dr. Dre, like when he's on the date with the woman that he eventually marries, and he's just like, I want you to move in with me, and she just kind of, you know, offhandedly goes, yeah, but what about this assault charge you have right now? And they just like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll just give it some lip service. And then when he, like, gets in that, like, that car chase, you know, and yeah. It's like, okay, you're not telling me the full story here. He didn't just like get upset and drive fast. there is more going on, right, in that incident. So yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, they try to show you a darker side of Dre, but I kind of wish that they had just, in fact, omit the Tupac stuff, omit the car chase, and maybe actually show the D Barnes thing in there. But I mean, I'm sure if you did, then you still would have, you know, upset a lot of people with the way they handled it. So it's a can't-win situation, and in the end, history is written by the victors.
Now, Brian, we mentioned off the top that this movie has been making money hand over fist. Have you been surprised by the massive, generally favorable response that this picture's been getting?
Well, I think that it's very of the moment, the way that it handles the police brutality. The fact that it's a good movie helps, and the biggest thing it has in its favor is that there is nothing else out there right now. And this had a fantastic marketing campaign. I actually think the whole straight out a meme thing, I think that really helped out. But I can't overstate how solid and how focused the marketing push for this movie was. I think another big thing that this movie, also Fantastic Four, you know, did nothing. So Straight Outta Compton, just looking at the movies that are coming out the next couple weeks, is probably going to be number one for another 2-3 weeks because there's just nothing else coming out, including Transporter Refueled, which I have seen, and I'm not allowed to say any more than that. but I look at what's coming out. There's nothing coming out. But the biggest thing that I think this movie proves, and it's a lesson that Hollywood's taken a while to learn, is that they continue to make movies just for, like, white, like, mid-30s audience goers, when actually that is the key demographic that has stopped going to the movie theaters. And movie audiences are now largely, they're lower income, they're black, they're Hispanic, because even though people complain, oh, $15 for a movie ticket, a night at the movies is still the cheapest night of entertainment. If you're taking someone on a date, it's a whole lot cheaper than going to a concert or you know, going to a play or something like that. So it's still the cheapest night of entertainment out there. But Hollywood for the longest time has still been programming for white people of a certain wealth. Whereas, you know, just look at the realism of the situation, those audience members kind of all bought televisions and you know, stay at home and wait for VOD and stuff like this. And that goes, you know, it also goes in hand with the fact that movie theater owners have not preserved the experience of going to the movies. So I think it just all goes, you know, around in a circle, and we can say when it started and whatnot. But the large thing is that movie-going audiences are so largely black and Hispanic, and that's an audience that doesn't get served very often by mainstream Hollywood, and I think that's something else that's definitely benefited this film as well.
Well, Brian, you talk about the audience in the theaters not being white, but there is a group of people who are primarily white, if I can go out on a limb, and Marcus and I were wondering in the first segment whether or not Straight Outta Compton will be receiving any nods for the Oscars coming up.
Last year, I would say it was definitely possible. They've restructured the voting rules a little bit, whereas before it was pretty much that pretty much between nine or ten films would be nominated for Best Picture. That's kind of been the rule of thumb the last 5 years or so. They recently changed it, where now it's like they have to get a certain percentage of a vote, and it looks like it'll be more like five or six nominees probably. So I think that will hurt it. Now, I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe Jason Mitchell get nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Eazy-E. I think that could be very possible. There's a lot of great stuff in the film. Editing, it wouldn't surprise me if that got nominated. But really, it all comes down to how things start to perform at the end of the year. A lot of times there's these big Oscar movies that everyone thinks is a slam dunk, and you see them and they're absolutely terrible. That's kind of what I'm heading into now. Seeing a lot of movies with a lot of big people, And you never know. You never know till you see them. But we have seen Straight Outta Compton, and the reviews are very, very favorable. So it honestly wouldn't surprise me if we found ourselves in that situation.
One of the guys in Black and Black Cinema, they actually reviewed the movie this week on the podcast, and they had a theory that if there's anyone who gets a nomination, it would be Giamatti. It would be the white guy.
Oh!
Do you think that would happen?
That's very possible, largely because the voting academy is older and white, so I think that's a character that they can kind of understand a little bit more. Also, his role is more understandably supporting, whereas I think that with the three leads, if you try to run Jason Mitchell as a lead, he's not going to get nominated. But if you try to run him as supporting, he very well could. But then sometimes academy voters get upset with category tampering. They think that you're running someone who should be, you know, a lead as supporting. And that's where like it all gets very weird and complicated and political. The one thing I can say, though, from my conversation with the director of the film, F. Gary Gray, he just became a member of the Academy this year. So that could work in the film's favor. Also, I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of feel like they have egg on their face and they want to make up for Selma last year.
Hmm. That would be crazy, though, Marcus. I have not heard Black on Black Cinema's review of Straight Outta Compton yet, but yeah, it would be wild if in this movie that is kind of this, I wouldn't say the start of something for black cinema, but it's certainly a reawakening that the white guy who's ostensibly the villain in this picture gets.
Black Twitter would be so mad. Pieces that come out after that.
Like, that would be the ultimate swerve. And speaking of swerves, brother man, how was SummerSlam?
SummerSlam was not too bad. It's interesting because we had these three straight nights of sold out shows in New York, and I came away with a few lessons from the experience. First off, NXT, I was there live. Not ashamed to say, I cried for Bayley Sasha. Going back and having rewatched it, I think it is the best women's match that company has ever put on in terms of storyline and just this amazing culmination. I think the Becky Sasha match might have been a little better worked, but this Bayley match, just the culmination of this 2-year story of her chasing after that dream. And not only that, but if you take the pre-show television taping that actually will be this week's episode of NXT, it was 4 hours of entertainment, 4.5 when you consider the length of the TakeOver special. And I got to say, it was better than the, you know, just shy of 4 hours at SummerSlam was. And it showed me a lot in terms of what NXT is doing and how the way they've presented their product and the way they've rolled out these stars, what that means. I mean, you look at the ovation that Blue Pants got on the TakeOver special, who's essentially a jobber. And you then see how the crowd reacted during Sheamus and Randy Orton. Like, they were treating an NXT women's jobber better than they were treating these two world champions. And I think that just shows you a lot with the difference between the way the two products are being presented. Moving on to SummerSlam, I think that's the big lesson to learn. What can we pluck from NXT that's working there? On top of that, I really enjoyed Monday Night Impact. We got to see a lot of your favorite stars, Nate, show up on Raw. And although I will say my biggest takeaway from the entire experience, living in New York, being here, watching all the coverage this thing got, if I'm New York, I seriously consider doing this maybe once a month. I look back at the Attitude Era when they were really against the ropes in like 97, 98, and one of the ways that they built themselves back up was they only worked the Pacific, or they only worked the Northeast. They only worked Chicago, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and New York. And if you watch those old Raws, they're at Madison Square Garden like once a month. But it was going back to those same fans, and that was then allowing them to educate the audience at home. So then when you say go to an Alabama, they know how to react. They know that when the New Age Outlaws come out, they know what to say. But right now, I think if, for example, Samoa Joe, huge talent, if you had debuted him on Monday, would have blown the roof off. But if you debut Samoa Joe in, say, Cleveland, Ohio, who knows? So this whole week has just made me think that maybe WWE should only run out of these major markets and then do house shows elsewhere, because just the buzz that this product had and all of the coverage, and I'm not just saying that because, you know, Seth Rollins came into Yahoo. I'm saying also the fact that, you know, John Cena hosting an entire hour of the Tonight Show or the Today Show, you could get into a groove where one night a week becomes WWE night on the Tonight Show. Like, just the ability to ingrain yourself in mainstream American culture, I think, cannot be overstated. So if I'm them, I'm a little upset to hear that apparently SummerSlam might be moving back to LA next year. But if I'm them, but actually, Marcus, here's what I'll offer you as a LA resident. Here's what I think would be the best trade off. SummerSlam becomes a New York exclusive event, but the Rumble becomes an LA exclusive event,
and
you can kick off Mania season with that hot, you know, Rumble show. And of course you have ESPN out there as well. Plus, if you really want to, it would allow you to maybe have one or two celebrity involvements in the Rumble match itself, if you wanted to go that route. I think that would be great. I think setting up these certain major events as a destination, as a conference, as a yearly schedule that people do, you know, make SummerSlam almost like a Comic-Con type thing for pro wrestling. Next year, rumor is Mania is going to be in Minneapolis. I just don't see the point of running a market like that. No offense to anyone in that part of the country, but it just isn't advantageous for your biggest show of the year when you're WWE, that as much as they like to think about it, it's not the Super Bowl. It's pretty close, but it's not as big as the Super Bowl.
Just to touch on the Minneapolis thing, I just got back from there a couple weeks ago. It would be an odd choice. It's still fucking cold in early April in Minneapolis. And this new stadium they're building is going to be a dome. But still, just the fact that when you think of WrestleMania weekend, you think of you're spending some time outdoors and going around to different events. And who wants to be miserable and cold driving around in 30-degree weather going from show to show?
I think it makes sense under one condition. And that is that show is main evented by Brock Lesnar and The Rock.
Yeah, and I was going to say there's a Brock Lesnar tie-in. Yeah. What's Brock's deal? I mean, if you're going to do Minneapolis, I would wait till Brock is actually done with the company.
And
send him off that way.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be for another year after that. And then maybe he re-signs again. I mean, he can continue wrestling for another, because he's only like 38 now. He can continue wrestling for another 5-6 years if he wants. And there's always going to be a use for Brock Lesnar. And the fact that he's part-time, people aren't going to get, you know, tired of him.
And second thing was, I do like the idea of having New York involved as the SummerSlam city. And I do think they should look into having, you know, New York as the SummerSlam city. As you mentioned, LA should be involved consistently for something. It was SummerSlam for the last 4 or 5 years. This year they have Hell in a Cell, which I don't think will do great. But definitely the Rumble, I mean, they could, you know, the weather's nice out here, they could build a whole weekend out of the Royal Rumble across the street from LA Live, where ESPN is located as well. So that's actually not a bad idea. Survivor Series, unfortunately, I think has lost some of that luster as the fourth pay-per-view. I think another show.
Yeah, and I think the only reason why it ever had that luster was kind of harkening back to when it was one of the only four, but they didn't protect that gimmick, and, you know, over time, I agree. I don't think that people really get excited for it. I mean, that being said, I do think WWE still internally thinks of it as a big show sometimes, and I think they have some, all I'll say is I think they have some newsworthy stuff planned for that show.
Speaking of which, do you think they would get better numbers if they move that show back to the night before Thanksgiving? Because on the network, you're really not going to lose a whole lot of people by moving that show. I think it would be more of an attraction, more of a draw, if you could market it as, hey, you know, night before Thanksgiving, as opposed to just a random Sunday in November.
Potentially. I mean, that's the thing with the network now. Like, it's not so much about the sale, selling it. It could be, hey, you know, honestly, I think the bigger thing they should do, or think about rather than doing that, is think about doing a pay-per-view from the UK. Yeah. I mean, we're going to see it, you know, in October when NXT goes over there. And again, I'm very excited for those shows. But I would say the UK would be something worth trying. I mean, honestly, Survivor Series could be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday. It's the network. You know, it doesn't really matter if people watch it live or if they watch it later. I would almost be open to maybe you know, trying a live thing on a Tuesday. On top of that, just speaking about this LA New York thing, WWE desperately needs to move some of their studio space from Connecticut to New York City. ESPN, people will go to Bristol because it's ESPN. People aren't going to go to Stanford. Yeah, they got a show with Jerry Springer because he lives in Stanford. But if you want to get a comedian, you know, one of my favorites, one of Nate's favorite, someone like Ron Funches. He's done stuff with the WWE Network, but they had to fly him out and take and bring him in. Whereas, like, almost the entire SNL cast, all wrestling fans. I know so many comedians in New York, all wrestling fans. And if WWE actually had, like, a small studio space in New York where they could easily bring a celebrity in, I think that'd be a major plus as well. Maybe even go the extra route, make it a combination event space restaurant. Who knows? I think WWE New York could actually work nowadays. Maybe I'm just a fool, but you don't put it in Times Square and you film some shows there, you might have something.
See, now I'm just thinking about Raw General Manager Ron Funches. Like, that would be must-see TV every Monday night if Ron Funches was a GM of Raw.
I think he's a little too busy for that. Although, I mean, GM Jon Stewart, I could definitely see if they stayed in the New York market.
Yeah, well, speaking of Jon Stewart, as a former member of the WWE creative team, was there any finish or any outcome of any of the matches on SummerSlam that, A, you really liked, or B, you would have done something different in terms of the way the match played out?
Well, how do I put that? I don't need to put it delicately. So I knew the finishes to all the matches ahead of time, and so I knew what Jon Stewart was going to be doing. And when I first heard it, I was like, oh, that's a way to get out of something. Doesn't make any sense at all. But it's weird because it's a thing that – so SummerSlam and the next night, very TNA nights.
that's not a good thing.
Very WCW nights. Yeah. You know, you got Jon Stewart coming in to cost John Cena the title. The big difference, though, is that I felt – Jon Stewart's performance both at SummerSlam and the next night was so enjoyable, and it worked. And if a bad idea works, you kind of excuse the fact that it's a bad idea. I would call the finish of this year's WrestleMania a bad idea, but it worked for enough people. And I think that this was fine. And if the plan works out the way they want it to work out, this will kind of be the beginning of a longer kind of feud between John Cena and Jon Stewart. I would be fine if it kind of led to a Bobby Heenan type thing where Jon Stewart keeps bringing up guys to try to beat down Cena, and he just stays committed to, I cannot let you win another world title. Or even if Jon Stewart just becomes the Pete Rose to John Cena, and every time they're in the New York market, it's their big show, John Cena might show up, and he'll get an AA, and you know, it's fun, and everyone goes home happy. But I think that Jon Stewart is like, honestly, the biggest celebrity to get involved in WWE in a long time. Not only that, but the most educated celebrity to get involved with the WWE in a long time. So while I thought it was kind of a bad idea, I thought the execution of it worked so well and it was so enjoyable that, you know, a bad idea done right is still done right. That being said, the Undertaker match, that finish was complete shit. So
tell them why you're mad, son.
I mean, it's just, I mean, Brock shouldn't be losing. That kind of a finish just makes me roll my eyes. Clearly, we're going back to this match. I hope sooner rather than later, and I do have reason to believe that it will be sooner rather than later. Sorry to keep having to be so cryptic and drop these hints like this, but I want to make sure people tune in and listen to Review and Impact, and this is the only way that I know how to do it.
Why don't you just let everybody know that you and Vince McMahon have brunch every Sunday? That's how you know all this stuff.
Did you send your birthday card over, Brian?
It took me leaving for him to really embrace me as an individual. No, yeah, I told him he didn't look a day over 69.
You said 69. God damn it.
God damn, that's a hilarious number. Yeah, no, it's I think that hopefully Brock Taker – what I'll say is I hope Brock Taker does not go on at WrestleMania. I think they have better things they can do. I think that The Undertaker, that will be his last match most likely. And if I'm petitioning, I petition for a John Cena match.
So do I.
I think Taker comes out and pretty much flat out says, this is my last ride, this is my last rodeo. I've done it all, I've seen it all, but there's one thing that I have not done, and that would be John Cena. The two of them have not had a major match since John Cena has become the flagship of the company. And not only that, but that match in Dallas, I think this is one of the rare times that if John Cena taps out to Hell's Gate, it would actually babyface him. And I think that that's the ultimate send-off you can give someone who's had the career that Undertaker has, which is potentially the best top guy of all time taps out to him. And I think the fans would actually respect John a little bit for actually doing that.
But if they go the other direction and Cena wins...
I don't think Cena would win because I also... If I'm not mistaken, I think John Cena might be taking some time off of after WrestleMania. So I think he could safely lose to The Undertaker and they both just disappear for a while. And then when John Cena comes back, people won't remember.
Darn.
I mean, unless he turns heel. Unless they finally go that route. But I don't think they're going to do that for another 2 years.
Yeah, with the guy who's given, 500 make wishes. It's not happening.
Hey, he hit 500. He can turn
now. Done now. He can turn. 501, not happening, son.
Yeah, that'd be the ultimate heel turn. The kid's like, hey, John, will you come to the... No.
Well, that's the thing. You get 500 punches on your Make-A-Wish card, and you get to turn heel.
I
pitched a story when I was there, which was an angle for Alberto Del Rio. And it was going to be the John Cena back-to-school night. And he was going to have all these like Make-A-Wish kids there. And he never shows up. And everyone's like, this is very uncharacteristic of John Cena. Where is John Cena? And instead, Del Rio, who was champion at the time, comes out and he says, I've decided that I am the champion. And I'm sorry that John Cena has abandoned all of these children. I will give you the back-to-school celebration that you deserve. And of course, everyone's rolling their eyes. It's like, God damn it, John Cena, back-to-school celebration. This is going to be terrible. But Del Rio comes out and he lowers down a John Cena pinata.
Mm-hmm.
And has these kids beat the shit out of a John Cena pinata, only to reveal that there is no candy inside. And he says, there you go. It's just as empty as the real man.
Oh.
And we didn't end up doing that. And then it was going to end up that John Cena was locked in Del Rio's trunk. And that's why he wasn't coming out. But eventually it would end with, like, Cena breaks out of the trunk and he comes out and he AAs Cena, or AAs Del Rio, and all the kids do the You Can't See Me, and that's how that's how it ends. But yeah, I really wanted that image of like all these kids beating up a John Cena pinata.
Oh, that's great. you know what else is great, Brian? A little show called Review and Impact. So before we let you get out of here, why don't you let the people know what this great show is all about and where they can catch it.
Well, you guys can catch it through the Live Audio Wrestling family of podcasts. Nate, you're there too. But, subscribe to through iTunes. And I got to tell you, if you have not watched or if you have not listened to Review and Impact, you got to start listening now, because if I had to guess, Nate, we are headed towards the series finale of Impact, as it does not look like this company is much for the world. They got their Bound for Glory October 4th, the day after the WWE Network special at the Garden, which I reasonably believe will get a whole lot more interest than Bound for Glory. I would say start listening to Review and Impact, because I would not be surprised if there's only about four more episodes left.
Let me ask you about that. So the date that was mentioned a while ago was the end of September, correct?
The understanding was that Destination America could not cancel TNA until September, until I think a year after they signed their deal. And I don't know what date that would be. I don't know anything else. Destination America has not said anything, positive or negative. TNA has finally started to tell their talent that they're not on the best of terms with their television partner, and they are looking for other deals. The fact that we don't know, and the fact that it's Destination America, they're not going to be like Spike. Spike let them stay on through the end of the year while they looked elsewhere. I think Destination America, as we saw with what they did to ROH, is just going to be 1 week. Sorry, you're not on television anymore. Instead, we got, Peeping Tom Hillbillies or whatever their typical, 9 o'clock show is. And, I would not be surprised, Nate, if 1 week you and I just – there's a press release and it's – TNA is no longer on Destination America, and then I don't know what they'll do at that point. Maybe they'll upload the episodes on on YouTube. But one thing I will say, though, don't expect Nate and I to disappear. Something's cooking up, and something is coming. So, you know, death begots birth or something that sounds regal.
Yeah, you know, with reviewing Impact's much like that man called Sting. The only thing that's for sure is nothing for sure.
Yeah.
You just had to mention Sting, didn't you?
Of course I had to mention Sting.
Okay, I'll ask this, Nate. How excited are you that Sting is going to be main eventing a WWE pay-per-view and getting a world title shot?
I'm actually excited about Night of Champions.
Yeah.
Like, I know there's no shot in hell of this man winning this title, but it's like, you know what? And I know Sting's going to lose, and he'll be 0-2, which is a whole other topic for a whole other day. We might spend 2 hours about it on Reviewing Impact this week. But, you know, I'm just happy that he's getting some shine. I am worried. I am annoyed, though, Brian, when they had the big reveal on Monday night. Why did they have that man sitting under that hot sheet for, like, 15, 20 minutes, however long the promo was, under the hot arena lights? It just didn't make any sense.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story about that. They, as far as what I was told, I think they had to make it a second time, because the first time they made it, they almost did or they didn't, I don't know. But originally they were going to use canvas, and they realized that canvas doesn't breathe, and Sting would have, like, suffocated being under there for 20 minutes. So they ended up having to use a different fabric than they were originally planning for that angle. Yeah, I mean, that obviously is just a drawback of the whole having to talk, having to do these 20-minute promo segments. I think it would have been fine if, you know, he had just come out and Seth had talked for maybe 5 minutes. That would have been fine. But I thought it was good. I liked it. You know, Sting probably, you know, won't win the title. But, you know, what's wrong with that, in my opinion? The dude's getting a lot of money. Dude's getting, like, per match what he probably got in TNA per year. And it's the right use of him. You know, it's a strong, solid win for Seth.
I agree. I think that Sting is, and he's a guy that never has had a problem giving the young guy some shine. Like, I always go back to Bound for Glory 09, and, you know, he did the right thing passing the torch to AJ Styles. Unfortunately, the company kind of botched that and poured water on said torch, but it's not Sting's fault.
No, and I think Sting's a guy who will, you know, definitely do what the company asks him. Most of the time. I mean, there's a few times where TNA tried to turn him heel and he just wouldn't do it because he knew that, like, no one would boo him. But yeah, typically, like, he'll do what they ask him to do. And I think, without a doubt, WWE is booking him better, really playing off the mystique and using him sparingly and knowing that it'll take a guy like a Seth Rollins to get, you know, that really solid match out of him. We'll see how much smoke and mirrors they use. But between that and between, you know, the Dudleys probably having a match on there. And the other thing, it's Night of Champions. Seth must defend both belts, so I would not be surprised to see Seth Rollins work a second match on that show.
Maybe they can get Hacksaw Jim Duggan to come out of retirement.
Maybe. I mean, I think the more likely thing is that Cena still has his rematch. So, and I after SummerSlam, I wouldn't mind seeing those two have another match. But Seth's definitely going to have his white working pants on. For that show.
That outfit was something else.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And speaking of a man that always has his working pants on, Brian, thank you for coming on the show tonight and playing hurt, if you will. Brian feeling under the weather, but, you know, he had to come on and share his thoughts on Straight Outta Compton as well as SummerSlam. So we definitely appreciate it. And, you know, we'll holler at you down the road, brother.
Sounds good.
All right, you can follow him at Brian Maxman on Twitter and talk his ear off and send him your hate tweets and whatever form of communication you want to pass his way. That is Brian Maxman. We are the Kings of Sport, and we'll be back with segment 4 coming up next.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of Compton. Another crazy ass nigga. My punks I smoke, yo, my rep gets bigger. I'm a bad motherfucker and you know this. But the pussy ass niggas won't show this. But I don't give a fuck, I'ma make my snaps. If not from the records, from jacking a crap. It's like burglary. The definition is jacking.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport, a proud member of the High Voltage Radio family. HighVoltageRadio.com is where you can go to find the internet's wildest selection of podcasts. We got shows like Mad Mock. We got shows like The Pittsburgh Nerd, Mustache Cash Stash, The Gravy Age, The Ebony and Ivory Cast, Podcast Unknown, Z-Pac Nation, Robin Slim, Axology featuring friend of the program, Hat Club Andy, and of course, Mr. Throwback Thursday featuring frenemies of the program, Bill and Jamie. So if you want to check out any of these shows, head on over to highvoltageradio.com and tell them the King sent you. Well, Marcus, that music means it is time for segment four, the part of the podcast that people flock to each and every week for their weekly dose of ratchetness. And we've got a couple of fairly ratchet stories. And, you know, I don't know about you, Marcus, but I always like to serve my ratchetness with a little sugar on top.
I see what you did there.
Oh, your man Sugar Shane Mosley has taken fight promotion to a new low, if you will.
Why is he my man? Because he's light-skinned? Is that how you operate?
He's been to the meetings.
Eh.
First of all, I didn't know Sugar Shane Mosley was still in the game. Second of all, I didn't know Ricardo Mayorga.
That's the better one.
Was still in the game.
Ricardo Mayorga's still fighting.
And apparently they're going to be fighting each other.
On pay-per-view.
Oh, and of course, whenever you have a big fight, you have to have the pre-fight press conference and photo opportunities and... We've seen these before, Marcus, where you've got guys that either threaten somebody or you've got, you know, some type of shenanigans going on in order to gin up interest for said fight. And like I mentioned this week, they took it to a new low as Ricardo Mayorga slapped Sugar Shane's girlfriend on the butt.
Yeah. Now, you've seen the video, right?
Yes, I have seen the video.
Why was she bending over at that very moment in front of Mr. Mayorga?
Are you saying that this was fabricated, Marcus?
I'm just saying, of all the times to bend over on stage, she happened to bend over at that exact moment?
Yes, and not only did she bend over at that exact moment, but if you haven't seen the video, and we will post it on the Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport, for those that haven't seen it. The slap in question isn't really like a big slap.
It's a tap.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little love tap on the butt. And next thing you know, Sugar Shane has Mayorga's neck in his hands and people are breaking it up. And that isn't even the craziest part. The craziest part, in my opinion, of this whole deal, Marcus, is the comments following this incident from Sugar Shane and his girlfriend when they're being interviewed.
The girlfriend afterwards, it seems like she was lecturing Shane as to why he didn't do more to defend her honor.
He slapped my ass! What are you gonna do to him?
Gotta save it for Saturday, baby.
Oh, man. It was so ridiculous, so hilarious. Like, the first thing I thought of when I saw this was... Did Vince Russo book this press conference?
It certainly wasn't Vince McMahon, that's for sure.
Real quick, Marcus, do you know how old both of these fighters are?
I do know Ricardo is at 41. I don't know about Shane.
All right. Sugar Shane, do you think he is older or younger than Mayorga?
Older. Blatt, don't cry. Don't let the lids fool you.
Sugar Shane Mosley is 43, Marcus. It's a combined 84 years old in the ring.
He's mentioning old fighters. Morgan Campbell, who we should have had on the segment to discuss this, was on Corey Ertman's boxing podcast last week. And in the opening segment, they talked about all these old fighters who were getting in the ring during the month of August, including Mayorga and Mosley. Roy Jones is fighting twice this month. Why? Don't ask. I don't know.
Y'all must have forgot.
Razor Ruddock? Is fighting. Yes.
Donovan Razor Ruddock?
Yes. 51.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know. Antonio Tarver.
Did somebody slap his girlfriend's ass too?
Maybe. Tarver's fighting this month.
Oh, you mean Mason the Lion Dixon?
Yeah. Bloated Antonio Tarver. Who I think just...
Who's he going to fight? James Toney?
James Toney fought this month.
Are you serious?
Yes.
James Lights Out Toney.
Yes. Former UFC star James Toney.
Did you ever watch that terrible movie they made about James Toney?
No.
It was about him and Jackie Callen. Meg Ryan was in it.
It was about James Toney's life?
It wasn't a biopic like Straight Outta Compton, but it was based off of Jackie Callen and James Toney.
Oh, okay.
Omar Epps was the fighter, and Meg Ryan was playing the Jackie Callen character.
Huh.
What was the name of that movie? Against the Ropes.
Oh, okay.
Because Charles Dutton directed it, and he played like the wise old black corner man.
For some reason, Shannon Briggs is fighting next month. I mean, these people.
Shannon Briggs, who hasn't been relevant since he was a guest on that Fugees album.
Yeah, wow.
So. Didn't Shannon Briggs fight George Foreman once?
Yep.
Oh, man.
So this is boxing in 2015. Once you did
you got the nerve to tell me Floyd's only fighting once or twice. Floyd's going to be fighting 50 years from now.
At 39 or whatever he is. He's doing on 40.
Floyd is a spring chicken compared to these dudes.
That Razor Ruddock one just blew my mind. I haven't heard his name in years.
I'm trying to think. The last time, did Ruddock fight Tyson?
I think so.
I'm looking up Donovan Razor Ruddock's... Razor Ruddock, a Canadian, by the way.
That's right, eh?
51 years old. He was a promising heavyweight in the late 1980s and early 1990s.
We're halfway through 2010. The decade 2010.
He fought 25 years ago. He fought Tyson twice.
Oh. Lost both times, huh?
Yeah, because the first one... was an early stoppage, and then remember they had that big brawl between Team Tyson and Team Ruddock.
Oh, yeah.
And then they had the rematch, and I think I remember the rematch because I think the rematch might have been on HBO. And the Crypt Keeper from Tales from the Crypt was, it happened around Halloween, and the Crypt Keeper was like setting up the fight. And you know how the Crypt Keeper talks and all these little silly puns?
Mm-hmm.
And so they had the Crypt Keeper pop up, and at first I wasn't sure if it was the Crypt Keeper or Larry Merchant, but that's besides the point. I don't know why I just threw shade on Larry like that.
That's uncalled for.
Yeah, it kind of was. But the Crypt Keeper pops up, and he's like, HBO Boxing is back, you know. We're going to give you a frightening good show. We've got 12 rounds of boxing, maybe more to go, and the winner will fight the winner of Holyfield Bowl. I was like, for real? Even back then, I knew this is going to be ridiculous. Razor Ruddock.
That was back in 1991.
Oh, man.
He
I'll tell you what's even more surprising. Razor Ruddock knocked somebody out this year.
I was going to say, he's fought two times already this year. That's the most surprising thing.
On March 28, 2015, Razor Ruddock returned to the ring with a fifth-round knockout over Raymond Olabuate.
After 14 years off, that's... Wow. Well, he was Canadian. Come on. He's fighting Canadians. No offense, Canadians, but...
Yeah, he knocked out Raymond Olabuate and got... looks like he got a majority draw against Eric Barak, both Canadian fighters.
Boxing's bad, right?
So here's a tie-in to the Fight Network, though. The knockout against Raymond Olabuate was at the Hershey Center in Mississauga.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Get all Mississauga. Home of Morgan Campbell.
Yes, shout out to our friends at the Fight Network. But yeah, man, Razor Ruddock, who is best known for his brutal knockout of Michael Doakes.
That's quite the resume.
I tell you what, Marcus, if we weren't doing this show, I think I could probably do a weekly podcast on late 80s and early 90s boxing, because that's the last time the heavyweight division was really exciting.
Yeah, unfortunately, currently it's not very good, I would say.
No, there's no personalities like Riddick Bowe or Mike Tyson, even Tommy the Duke Morrison.
Tommy Morrison, Foreman.
Remember Merciless Ray Mercer?
Yeah. What still happened to the heavyweights?
That's still one of the most vicious beatings I've ever seen in the boxing ring, when he beat up Tommy Morrison.
What's Tommy Morrison doing? Oh, wait. Never mind.
I don't think he's doing too well, Marcus.
I forgot about deeds. Yeah, all right.
Didn't he say he got healed by an Indian healer?
That's what you said, right?
Like some Indian shaman healed Tommy Morrison. At least that's what Tommy Morrison alleges.
Yeah, well.
But at least Tommy Morrison has a win over Razor Ruddock, so.
He was healed, but he still died, so.
Then he still died. So was he really healed?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Rest in peace, Duke.
Yeah.
What was his name in Rocky V? Was it Tommy Gunn?
Yeah, speaking of which, I saw the trailer at the theater for Creed.
What'd you think?
I got excited the first shot when it was him and it was Michael B. Jordan and, was it Bart Still? Was it Avon? Who's in
the movie? Yeah.
I was like, oh, The Wire. It looks okay, I guess. It looks like every other boxing movie, though, unfortunately.
There's a lot of boxing movies out. You think them make a movie out of this Mayorga Shane Mosley fight?
I'm going to say no.
Did you see Shane Mosley on Sports Nation today?
No, I saw someone tweeted that he was on, and I wondered why, and then I didn't watch.
First of all, boxing has not been kind to this man. Like, you can tell he's still pretty sharp, but the words are coming out slower than they used to, which is never a good sign. But the second thing was, Max Kellerman and Marcellus Wiley asked him point blank, was this real or not? And Max was like, you know, if this was my wife or my girlfriend that this dude disrespected like that, you know, it would have taken a lot more than two or three people to get me off of him. And Sugar Shane was like, why would I fight him for free and risk hurting my hand when I could put a hurting on him in the ring? I was going to knock him out anyway, but now I'm going to destroy him, which I don't know what delineation he's making between knocking the man out and destroying him, but that was his explanation.
Oh, yeah, he shouldn't be boxing, but you know what?
Who is licensing these fighters?
State of California for this one.
That's your people, Marcus. Why?
Because, well, actually, number one, who's paying money to see this fight? Who's actually going to order this fight on Saturday?
Somebody will get duped into buying this fight.
Second of all, there's actually a legitimate fight going on Saturday for free on ESPN. And actually in Los Angeles, in Santa Cruz and Mara. So I'm not sure why anyone outside of the whole train wreck element, which might come from this fight, would actually pay money to see it on Saturday.
Wow, I'm just looking up the Sugar Shane comeback tour. This is not his first comeback tour.
Nope.
Do you know how his first comeback tour ended, Marcus?
Was this pre-Floyd or post-Floyd?
This is post-Floyd. This is...
I feel like someone knocked him out.
Yes, but the way that he lost the fight is maybe the most old man way ever and maybe a sign that he should not be fighting in 2015. He lost to Anthony Mundine, and the way that he lost was by a technical knockout, and he had to retire due to back spasms.
Oh, man.
It's like, oh, my back. Oh, I can't even get up. like, I just had a birthday, Marcus, and I'm feeling some aches and pains that weren't there, you know, a couple years ago when I wake up. But I'm not a fighter. I'm not trying to get in the ring and fight to put food on my table. You know, this dude is older than me, and he is out here trying to fight in these streets. Why can't you talk to your boy, Marcus?
Once again,
a California guy. Why can't you sit him down and talk some sense into him?
Not my boy, number one. Number two, it doesn't. Ed's wives, man, he's got to pay those bills. Ed's wives don't go away for free. They want their money.
Oh, man. But, yeah, so I think the other thing that has come out is his girlfriend is an actress. So I was going to say, if she's an actress, this was a terrible demo reel for her.
Yeah, that's a bad audition.
You just going to let him disrespect me like that, Shane? I'm like, is she punch drunk too? So who you got in the fight, though, before we move on to our second topic in segment four? You got Sugar Man or Mayorga?
Oh, boy. I guess Mosley.
Will he win by knockout, much like he did in the first fight?
No. It's going 12, unfortunately.
So these two old men combined
10. Years yeah, old, 10 rounds.
Are going 10 rounds?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think I'm gonna be looking forward to this. I will not watch it. But I think I'm gonna go with Sugar Shane because you know you just can't let a man slap your lady on the hind parts and let him get away with that. So he's not only gonna knock him out, but he's gonna destroy him, Marcus.
All right, we'll see.
Can you use a walker in boxing? Is that legal?
Not yet, at least. If Bernard Hopkins hasn't used one yet, then it's not allowed.
Alright. That's it for Sugar Shane and Mayorga. Let's go to the next topic, Marcus, because I think we need more ratchetness. That was ratchet, but we need to go even one step further.
Well, I got the story for you. You don't know the story yet. It came out while we were recording the show. So we go to Deadspin with the headline report, IK Impali got catfished by a guy under a blanket hiding in the dark.
IK Impali got catfished by a guy hanging out in a blanket in the dark.
Yep. This is according to Outside the Lines.
This sounds like the worst edition of the At Midnight hashtag game ever.
Yeah. We're just going to call him IK for this purpose. This story, his last name is too damn hard. According to Outside the Lines.
So was that man hiding under the blanket?
And, oh, poor IK.
So what's going on with IK?
He missed his 2011 season opener while attending Louisiana Tech because, quote, he injured his hand when punching a man he thought was a woman with whom he had arranged to have sex. And
so what, the guy was just hiding under the blanket and IK thought a girl was hiding under the blanket?
Here's the detail. So according to the police report, on September 1st, 2011, IK began exchanging messages with a new Facebook friend named Missy Lee. That should have been warning sign number one. Anyone quote Lee and the first name, yeah, don't trust them. Who offered to perform oral sex on IK if he would come over to her house? It's never that easy, fellas. Come on. I don't care who you are. Just ask Bill Cosby. He told police that after he entered the house through a side door, he saw a figure inside, quote, covered head to toe in a blanket, and the person would not remove the blanket. IK stated that he felt uneasy about the situation, so he left, the report states. But IK returned to the house after Missy Lee called him and convinced him to come back. When he arrived, the person wearing the blanket still refused to remove it and also refused to turn on the lights. When a cell phone in the room rang, the screen lit up the room enough to see that the person under the blanket had facial hair, the report states.
Wait a minute. So IK got under the blanket?
No, I think IK didn't get under the blanket, but the blanket let enough light in to see what was underneath the blanket. IK said another person had also entered the room. IK stated that he felt that he was being set up for a robbery of some type, the police report states. IK stated that fearing for his safety, he then struck the subject in the blanket. IK stated that after he struck this person, their voice changed to that of a male. IK stated that he then left the residence through the window. Deadspin later says, afterwards, Missy Lee, police found he was really a man named Kendron Anderson, and ESPN reports his Facebook says he is senior pastor and founder of Life Community Church.
Whoa.
And demanded $1,000 from IK for breaking his teeth, but IK was only willing to pay $500. When all the threats continued, IK went to the police.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack here, Marcus.
Whew.
First of all, okay, IK said, well, he met this woman on a website.
No, he got a Facebook message.
Okay, so IK gets a Facebook message, gets into some type of dialogue, some type of conversation with this woman, quote unquote. She says, "Come on over, because I'm gonna give you some brains. We can have a study session." IK goes over and feels uneasy about the situation, leaves, gets a call from this person.
And then goes back.
I want to know how good this person is at disguising their voice.
That's a good question.
Because it's not like he got a woman to call IK for him. He was actually on the phone.
As the woman. As Missy
pretending Lee. To be a woman, right. So then IK goes back and thinks he's going to be robbed, punches the man under the blanket.
And then goes out the window.
Turns out the man is a pastor at a church, and the man is extorting IK for his medical bill of $1,000. And anybody that knows Geno Smith knows that IK is about his money. He's a very frugal person.
This involves everything in the Geno Smith story. Owed money and punching people in the mouth. Gino wasn't offering oral sex that we know of, so that part's not the same. But
maybe he wouldn't have got punched in the jaw if he did.
Okay. And you know the story only came out probably because of the Geno Smith stuff. No one knew who this dude was.
Yeah, nobody knew who he was, let alone knew how to pronounce his last name.
Yeah, I still can't pronounce his last name. He was a Jet.
Oh, man. And this, I guess NFL teams knew about this because NFL teams are very judicious when they are investigating draft picks.
Numerous teams were aware of the incident and it affected his draft stock.
Mm. You thought Michael Sam had some issues.
That's on top of his earlier assault on an off-duty officer.
What was the situation with that? Like, did the details ever come out about that one?
Just that it happened at a bar and he got charged with battery and disturbing the peace, but I don't know what exactly led to him punching the sheriff officer.
Did the sheriff owe him money?
Might have.
Like, okay, can you buy me a beer? No, I don't like spending money. I get violent when people ask me for money. Oh, man, this is crazy. So, wow. Well, what would you do if you were in that situation, Marcus? Knowingly that neither one of us would have put ourselves in that situation. But let's say you're already there, and you got this lady man slash man lady under the blanket. What would be your reaction to this situation?
I mean, if I go in the house and the lights are off and I don't see anyone in the open, I'm a little skeptical. Especially if you see someone in a blanket. I'm like, yo, I'm out. What's going on here?
It's all good. Just come under the blanket.
Nah. You need me? Take that blanket off.
Oh, man. This is ridiculous. Like, this might be one of the all-time segment four stories.
The guy is 34. He's in Shreveport, Louisiana.
This Ken, what's his, Kenton? Kendrick?
It's K-E-T-R-I-R-Y-N. Kentron Anderson? Tetron? I don't know. It's a weird name.
Maybe it's Katrina.
Katie. Yeah.
So, this is like old school catfishing. This is like...
Oh, there's photos of this dude.
Here oh, hold go. On. Life Community Church Facebook. Let's investigate. All right.
It must be him.
Uh-oh. Pastor Ketron Anderson. senior pastor and founder. Oh. Yeah. He looks like he'd hide under a sheet.
Let's see. Let's go to his Facebook page.
Uh-oh.
No mutual friends. That's a good start.
It would be funny if you knew somebody that knew Ketron.
So he's
posted about the incident?
Well, he wrote, there's another Facebook account formed under name Ketron Anderson as pastor of Life Church. Please do not add this individual.
Huh. Someone made another me profile and is messaging all of my friends. I reported it. The devil is busy.
Amen. Not as busy as his mouth was.
I mean, to be fair, Ketron, I mean, you've got to cause some of this yourself. Trying to lure in unsuspecting football players playing the Isley Brothers Between the Sheets in the background.
Yeah, he's the fact that he's even posting on Facebook today. I mean, it kind of sucks for him because he got dragged into this national story, but at the same time, what he did was kind of foul, very foul.
It kind of sucks. I see what you did there. Like, hey, pastor, want to see my CD collection?
CD's nuts.
That's still probably my favorite moment from last week. Like, just that whole conversation and then tying it up at the end when I didn't even think I was going to get you on that.
Yeah, you got me good.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's not a good look for anybody involved. Not for Ketron, not for IK. And I want to know who about the other dude. Like, what was the other dude doing in the room? Like, what was the actual goal? Was it actually a plan to rob him? Was it actually a plan for Ketron to solicit sex from IK? Like, what was the end game for these two dudes?
Maybe he was in a videotape. I don't know.
People have been saying like IK is like unhinged and things like that, but I would suspect if you've been through a couple of these type of experiences, you might be a little on edge.
Well, going back to Mr. Anderson here, I'm looking at his Facebook page and noticed a check into his church this past Sunday with a message that says, Sunday school is marching on. This dude can't teach a Sunday school next week, right? Like, he's done with the church, correct?
Oh, I don't know. He might have to do, who was it? Was it Jimmy Swaggart or Jim Baker? Like, the dude back in the 80s that got caught. Tammy Faye Baker? Yeah. Her husband, Jim Baker, got caught with a prostitute, and he had to go on TV with the crying eyes. I have sinned against you. Like, he had to do a big production to be able to get out of this one.
He used to have some explaining to do.
Like, you just can't show up in church on Sunday. Like, how you doing, Sister Johnson? How you doing, Brother Johnson? Like, no, how you doing, Brother Johnson?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that you're teaching kids.
Does he show up to church under a blanket?
Oh, man. That's right. Someone should bring a blanket to service on Sunday. It's cold outside, Pastor.
The whole congregation just shows up in blankets.
Oh, man.
Like, we know what you did. Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know about this Ketchum Anderson. He's got, you know, I don't want to stereotype and categorize people, but he's got that look like, I can see him doing something shady.
Yeah. This Facebook page is interesting. I'm trying to see if he made any comment around the Geno Smith news, but I don't think he did. I think he's smarter than that.
He's like, I feel your pain, Geno, literally.
Been there, done that, Geno.
Oh, man. Every picture he's got, pretty much every picture he's wearing these sunglasses.
Yeah.
What are you trying to hide, Pastor?
Oh, he's Pastor Rick Warren. I think he has some L.A. ties here.
Really?
Yeah. I'm trying to see if I can find something more definitive.
Oh, man. Oh, he's got some crazy pictures. Like, they're like the old glamour shots.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's, like, posed up in, like, he's wearing one black and purple pinstripe suit. Looks like a draft pick. He's always very contemplative in these pictures. Probably thinking about the night he got his jaw broke.
That would scar me for life.
Oh, he is a Lakers fan.
I think he's from L.A. Let me try to do some sleuth work here.
He is a Lakers fan, so.
What are you trying to say?
I'm not making any blanket statements, Marcus.
I think he's from Compton, actually.
He's got a straight out of Compton thing on his page.
And he had like, someone post, you know? Someone listed like the actual zip code of Compton, so I think he might be from Compton.
Huh. Yeah, he's got a straight out of Compton. One of the memes, yeah. So.
This was 2011, so 4 years ago. He probably thought this story was.
Willowbrook?
Yeah.
He's from Willowbrook, apparently. Or at least that's where he grew up.
Okay, that's like Compton adjacent.
Huh. Uh-oh. The plot thickens. Huh. Oh, his suit game is on point, though. His church suit game is on point.
It's too hot for those suits down in Louisiana, man. Hope they have AC at the church.
Yeah, this just happened like 2 hours ago when he made that post about somebody making the fake
yeah,
account.
Yeah, so it happened after the story broke. So, I bet you someone created that account after they saw his name and
the story. I wonder what's going on with the fake Ketchum. Let me look that up real quick. See what fake Ketchum's talking about. What's going on with fake Ketchum Anderson? Okay, let's see. I should write him and be like, why don't you link me to the fake one? I'm trying to do a show here.
Yeah, we're trying to get material here. Help us out.
Help us out, Ketchum.
Or are you going to come on the show? You can give your side of the story. Might have a mouthful to tell us.
Oh. I'm not seeing this fake Ketchum Anderson page. He says people have posted.
Hmm. Well, I'm going to keep an eye on his Facebook page this week because I do want to see what happens with his role at the church.
Yeah.
If we have anyone in Shreveport, Louisiana who can go to service on Sunday for us and report back, Periscope is service.
How close is Shreveport to Charleston? Maybe get Henry Thompson to go travel to church and do some information for us.
We'll pay for your gas money.
Yeah, you ain't got nothing else going on this weekend, Brother Henry. Go do some research for us. You hold on, Henry. This is how we're going to tie it up. You can help us out by going undercover.
Oh, man.
Maybe that should be the title of this week's show, Undercover Brother.
Undercover Brother. Works for me.
So shout out to you, Ketrin Y. Anderson. And I think your middle initial will be the question everyone's asking all week.
There's a lot of whys.
Why was he under the covers? Why was he pretending to be a woman? Why did that man hit him in the face? Why was he so stupid and trying to get his money back? Like that seems like an acceptable
common theme
loss.
with IK. Getting your money back. Maybe just let the money go. Chalked it up as a loss.
Well, that makes me laugh though that IK was not willing. He was so adamant that he was not gonna pay this man $1,000 for his medical bills. He's like, I'll go half on it.
I mean, I would pay. I'm surprised he wanted to go half on it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, why would you even throw that out there?
I'd be like zero.
And if you're Ketrin Anderson, why wouldn't you accept that?
Yeah, you gotta take the L, man.
Like, it's kind of your fault you got punched in the face.
Well, the website for the church is down. It's taking me to a GoDaddy page.
Really?
Yeah. Not sure if it's just, you know, sloppy website management or just it happened to go down today.
No, we're just gonna go on in something that happened today.
All right.
You brought down the entire church, Ketrin. Oh, wait a minute. Here we go.
What'd you find?
Dan Miller has posted on the church page like 10 minutes ago.
Uh-oh.
Better start updating that resume now, Mr. Anderson.
Oh!
The media is coming, and you can't hide behind Jesus forever.
Woo.
It's over, bro. Might as well give up now and accept the coming storm. People who attend this church might want to have second thoughts about supporting a man who tried to either have sexual relations with another man or tried to extort him. Don't believe me, family? Read this. And he sends the link to the Deadspin story, as well as, I guess, the Washington Post has picked this up now, and ESPN has also picked this up.
ESPN broke it. Outside the Lines broke it.
Okay, so yeah, he sent links to all three stories. Deadspin, The Post, and ESPN.
Ooh. Now, the irony is, look at Dan Miller's Facebook photo.
Yeah, it's very, he's got the rainbow thing going on.
Yeah, so is that in support of the movement on Facebook a few weeks ago, or? Let's see, let's check on Dan's photo. Dan is a white gentleman, it looks like.
Yes, that is a safe assumption.
I'm assuming he's a member of the church. I would hope he is and not someone who's just coming in the troll.
He's
sort of like us from afar.
Right, through his page I can tell he is a religious man, but I don't know if he's down with that particular church because a lot of his stuff seems to be arch-conservative type stuff.
Because he says people who attend this church might want to have second thoughts about supporting a man. So that's makes me sound like he doesn't attend the church.
Yeah, I don't think he goes to the church. I think he, much like us, he went down the Ketrin Anderson rabbit hole. I got to say, though, if everybody that followed this story and followed the links liked this community page, I'm sure they'd be like, right now they have 257 likes. I think if everybody that followed this story and tried to find out information about Ketrin Anderson went to this page, they'd have like at least 1,000 likes by the end of the night.
Looks like he works in South Dakota. So, yeah, he's not a member of the church.
Dan Miller firing the first shots and has a couple people liking it already.
Oh, man. I might have to bookmark this page. keep track of what else comes in.
Yeah, we might have to give you
an update next week.
Update next week. Unfortunately, the only other comment, there's two comments here. One from 8 minutes ago with Dan Miller, and one from 2014 from a lady named Angelina who says, "Your L.A. fam is so proud of you, Ketron. We're rubbing those pennies together so we can come and see you show up and show out."
When I read that the first time, I didn't read pennies. I read something else.
Oh, man. I think a lot of people are going to be reading something else when it comes to Ketron Anderson and Life Community Church. Yeah, he's going to have to step down. If not this week, next week. Because I'm sure this week he can do the whole...
I've sinned and...
Well, not even that. I think he'll have 2 weeks. Because week one, this coming Sunday, he can do... You know, the devil is active, family. Whenever you're doing right, the devil wants to bring up some stuff.
Amen.
And then next week, after it comes out that he really did do it, he'll do the I have sinned, please forgive me. And then the following week is when he's going to have to turn in that resignation.
Yeah.
So if you're a minister out there, Life Community Church in Louisiana might be looking for an opening.
Yeah. This story.
Oh, man. This is one of the, I was going to say one of the few times, but it's not a few times that I'd want a national show. But this is one of the times where I would really love a national show. Like if this were on the air, live as it happened, because we could go to calls on this.
Yep.
Anybody in Louisiana know this man? Know what's going on with him and IK? Call in.
Let us know.
But the best we can do, Marcus, is go through social media. So if anybody's out there in Shreveport, and they know about this story, or LA family, if you know. The right Reverend Ketron Anderson. Hit us up on Twitter at KOSPOD, KOS_POD, or on the Facebook page, facebook.com/kingsofsport. And like Marcus said, I think we're going to have to follow this story and keep tabs on it.
Yeah, we got questions for this dude.
Because this is just the beginning. Like, this literally happened a couple hours ago.
Yeah, it's about to get ugly.
I hope you prayed up, Pastor. Yeah. So I think that's going to do it this week, Marcus.
Yeah, we can't top that.
No, I think we've 2 weeks in a row, we've had some potential best of segments.
Yeah.
So thanks to D's Nuts and thanks to Ketron Anderson.
IK's Nuts.
IK's Nuts. Those Nuts.
Those Nuts.
We did forget to... do the list this week. Well, I think we'll leave the question open for another week.
Oh, I forgot about too, leave it open.
Video game athletes, and we'll talk about that next week as well. We'll probably get back to second down because I think I'm going to close the registration for the fantasy football next week.
Okay.
So if you want to get in on the Kings of Sport Fantasy Football League, go to facebook.com. There's a link there, and you can join up and try to not only defeat Marcus and myself, but knock out the franchise who is going for the rare four-peat.
Are we going to have this dude on the show?
I don't even know if he's real. I think he's some type of Kaiser Soze.
Yeah.
And if we call him, if we have him on the show, how can we be sure that it's really him? He could be trying to fool us. It could be a Ketron Anderson situation.
Oh, boy. I got another addition to the story.
Uh-oh.
Going through his photos.
How's this for journalism?
His cousin is Justin Holliday of the Golden State Warriors.
Really?
Yep. He's had a picture of him and Justin, and... He said, "He's honored to congratulate my little cousin Justin and the Golden State Warriors on being the Western Conference NBA champions. When Jesus says yes, nobody can say no. Houston family will not tag you in this post, but I know you'll see it. Have a good night."
Oh
man, the story keeps getting better.
So when Jesus says yes, no one can say no. But
when IK says, yeah.
If IK says no, you better not say yes.
His teeth say no. That's what happens.
Then again, if he was missing teeth, it might make some things easier.
Oh, boy. And on that note, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, Marco Will, MarcoWill.
Yeah. Go through Marcus's pictures and stuff and see how he likes it.
Yeah.
If you have anything embarrassing, you might want to get rid of it now, Marcus.
I got nothing.
I think the most embarrassing picture is the one with you and Cosby.
Oh, yeah. The Cos.
You can find me on Twitter in the number 8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter, Black Nate, BLAQUE, _ in the number 8 on Instagram. It's even confusing to me sometimes. Follow the show, like we mentioned, at CosPod on Twitter, KOS_POD. You can leave your top 3 fictional video game sports athletes, or not fictional, but video game sports athletes there, coming in the wake of our discussion last week about Mike Vick and Bo Jackson in video game form. Leave us your top 3 video game athletes, and also any information on Ketron Anderson. Now we're like a tip line.
Yeah.
If you have any tips on the whereabouts of Ketron Anderson.
You've been catfished.
Maybe we need to get Neve on the show.
Yeah, he'd be good.
Yeah, he's probably too big time, though. I don't see him. I don't see him slumming on a podcast.
No.
So, trying to think. Maybe we can get somebody that's actually been catfished, though.
Yeah, if you've been catfished, let us know.
You can follow the show Facebook.com/KingsOfSport. Podcast land, by the time this comes out, we should have 2, maybe 3 more days, depending on when you listen to it, left for August podcast of the month. We're top 5 in sports, top 5 comedy, and top 7 overall, but we could still make a late push. Go to podcastland.com, vote for the Kings of Sport. We certainly appreciate it. iTunes, Stitcher, like, rate, review, and share the show with your friends. And like we said, next week we're going to be back. We're talking some football. We might have an update on this Ketron Anderson story in segment 4. And who knows what else we will discuss. So unless you got anything else, Marcus, we're going to call it a show.
No, that's it.
All right. So for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather, Nate Milton. Good night, Razor Ruddock. Wherever you are, because you've been down with the King.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.